Hello and welcome back to We the People, your favorite weekly Nintendo podcast. My name is Michael, and I'm joined by my twin brother, player two since the womb, Matthew Cottrell.
Yo!
Say hello to the people.
Hello, hello!
Of course, the brotherly duo from Cottrello Games. Have a little Nintendo podcast on the side to keep you informed and entertained with all the new Nintendo goodness that's happening in the realm. So let's kick off this show with Mario 3D All-Stars. Of course, that's the new game. It's dropping in an hour in our U.S. territory. It's out in some other ones, like I imagine Europe's already dropped. We had a Japanese copy that we were able to procure, and so I've had the chance to play each of the games early. And I guess we should probably preface this conversation with how the game leaked online days before, where data miners had discovered a bunch of interesting discoveries. And so this comes from the Twitter user Oatmeal Dome, Thomas Nett, Garnett Sunset, and others. They've all been sharing their findings through Twitter and have discovered the following through data mining and inside sources. The inside sources part, you got to take with a grain of salt, but I feel like all the logic checks out here, and these guys aren't leakers in the sense where they're not looking for clout in Twitter followers. They just know things because they work in game development. So from some of that insider information and files that are in the game that help to confirm this, Super Mario 3D All-Stars development likely started in late February of this year. Super Mario Galaxy 2 was cut due to time constraints, and the games all run through emulation except for Mario Galaxy, which loads all of its graphical assets and I believe all the sound through emulation, but then the game partially runs through the Switch's CPU in addition to that emulation. References to games like Perfect Dark and Kirby 64 are found within Mario 64's files, but these are most likely holdovers from the Wii U 64 emulation software and not a clue for future releases. So I guess before I give my early impressions on the game, Matthew, what do you think about all this? I mean, does this kind of confirm everything we were talking about last week on the podcast, or does this change your opinion of the game at all?
Oh, I think it confirms it. It doesn't exactly change my opinion, because my opinion was already set, so to speak, on the fact that I already felt like this was just a cheap money grab, to put it lightly, even though that's not putting it lightly. But you know, I just wasn't really impressed with the products they were putting out, and this, you know, further drives that point home. You know, that I don't really think it's worth the money. You know, you were talking about some of these decisions were made due to time constraints, but I feel like they should take that into account with the price. You know, if you're not going to be able to deliver on what you were, you know, setting out to deliver, you know, and because of that, you have to, you know, rush and make some changes, such as running the game partially on an emulator. To me, you know, that should go into the price as well. Make it a cheaper game. Like, if you were selling this for $40, let's say, I wouldn't really have a problem with that. But just a $60 product, and we covered all the limitations that each game has, the fact that, you know, Super Mario 64 isn't running at widescreen, Super Mario Sunshine, you know, is, I forgot what we said about it, but it, oh yeah, the GameCube controls, you know, you can't use a GameCube controller for it, you know, things such as that. And to me, those were already big red flags, but then you factor this in as well, and to me, it just screams that this should be a cheaper product. Because again, I'm not going to go through all the remasters that have been done much better, but one I will point out in particular is the remaster of Medieval on PlayStation 4, where that's not even a $40 game, that's a $30 game. And the crazy thing about that is that's a complete remaster, but then they also package in the original release of that game with it. So you're essentially getting that Super Mario treatment, Super Mario All-Stars, but you're also getting a beautiful remaster of that game as well. So, you know, just taking things like that into account, and just the data miners finding out that, you know, Mario Sunshine and Super Mario 64 ran on an emulator, to me is just, yeah, no, I, doesn't change my opinion, but it definitely makes me feel like $60 is a stretch for this product.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of, what I think too. This,
it's a lot of coins.
Honestly, I don't even think that calling this an enhanced port is even fair anymore outside of Galaxy, which doesn't recontextualize the motion controls well, so that's not even like a pure upgrade. It definitely seems like this is content we would have seen on the Virtual Console on Wii U, except more expensive. Now, there's other little nice parts where we get a resolution bump, we get a replacement of some of the button prompts, but I mean, you know, is that really changing the Mario 64 experience? Not really. This feels like what Virtual Console would have evolved into on the Nintendo Switch. And honestly, the way that they're building this, it kind of paves the way for them to do that for GameCube and 64 games, where they make these very, 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 very light touches and then sell them at what is so far a premium price, but you'd hope that it'd be priced a little more fairly in the future if you're buying these piecemeal. But yeah, this just kind of, definitely feels like a little nostalgia cash grab. Something like, you know, this feels a little more like the PS1 classic rather than the SNES classic. And I guess to explain what exactly I mean by that, I would say that the Super Nintendo Classic gave you perfect pixel mode. It gave you a couple of different resolutions to choose from. It gave you a incredible bundle of games where, like, I mean, if you added them all up at Virtual Console price, you pay much more than the product itself. You got something physical to hold on to, something that's kind of cool and retro, and the packaging is very kind of collectory. Whereas, like, you know, this, you just get a box and a slip of paper that has the cover on it. No special art. Yeah, I mean, these aren't really even like the definitive versions of this game, because while they make it look a little bit prettier, they also you're playing Sunshine with this weird kind of gimped control scheme that we'll get into in a little bit. Galaxy, it feels great that you can press Y to spin, but then, you know, using the Pro Controller to navigate the motion control sections is kind of awkward. And so, you know, I guess, yeah, let me just go into how I feel about this game. So I've played about like I played like the first couple of worlds of each game, enough to just kind of get my feet wet in it and see the whole experience. The first thing that you'll notice when you go into Super Mario 3D All-Stars is you're going to see that they didn't really put much work into the how should we say, the experience of like kind of walking through a museum. And other collections have done this really well. If you look at something like the Sonic Mega Collection, you could look at a bunch of comic book covers, you could look at behind the scenes concept art for a bunch of games. And this was, you know, in a time where you couldn't just like find that all on the internet. And, you know, it's funny that we got more like concept art and museum type of material from the giant Nintendo leak that happened a few months back than we did in this game. It opens with a very simple, like, Mario spins around in three games and boom, you're in the game. They have like a small write-up for each game, and you can choose the soundtrack on the main screen, and that's it. Which is just kind of funny. I mean, it's not like you had to do it, but they're just not setting the bar very high, especially, again, considering, like, you know, how cool the experience and menus are for the NES and SNES Classic. You would have thought that they would have gone a little bit further there. But, you know, that's all just window dressing anyway. How do the games play? Mario 64 is surprisingly clunky. For, you know, I haven't played that game in a long time, and I recently beat the DS version of the game, which plays on a D-pad, and everybody's complaining that you control the game with a D-pad and it's awful. But I didn't really find the joystick all that better. I don't know if it's just the Pro Controller not translating super well to the controls of that game, but I found myself doing a lot of missed inputs, a lot of mistakes in doing one move over the other. Instead of doing somersaults, Mario was just kind of jumping forward, and yeah, I mean, honestly, that game is just the time that it came out and how it set a precedent for 3D platform games for that entire generation. It just exists in this vacuum that is almost like immune to criticism. But I always have thought that that game is a little overrated. Like, most of the levels are just kind of like climbing up a hill or climbing down a hill, and then they remix that six times, and that's the game. You know, it definitely still has a lot of its charm. It still is just the opening in particular is just so well designed in that game. How that very first King Ba-Bomb level prepares you for the entire game, including the last boss that functions pretty similarly to that first boss battle. And so a lot of those ways that they introduce the mechanics are really quite genius and have aged very well. But at the same time, I really would have liked for them to rework the camera system or to bump up the frame rate. Maybe we made the controls a little bit easier to perform, or, you know, kind of like freshen that up. But you're not getting any of that. And I feel like, you know, the game just, the more that they bring this on every single system without adding some of those quality of life changes that would really be nice for it, the less enthusiastic about the game that I become. But, you know, at the same time, like, I'm excited to play it again tomorrow. So there's that. And then that takes us to Sunshine, which gets even stranger from the control scheme perspective. So in the hilarious video where they just kind of doctor the cutscenes, where the flood is supposed to say the R button and they just say the cut button, it's just like, seems like such a rush job where they couldn't be bothered to like mix that better. And the way that you play that game is you use the top R button to do the more powerful flood shot, where you have the ability to aim the flood. And then you've got the other trigger that lets you run around and use it. I didn't check, but I'm gonna guess that you can't change that. And then they actually like inverted the control scheme from the original Sunshine for some reason. And yeah, you can't use a GameCube controller. Now, I feel like the taking out the GameCube controller is because they can't replicate the way that the triggers function in the GameCube, which is, you know, actually kind of cool. The way that it worked back then was if you lightly press the R button on the GameCube, you would do one type of flood spray attack, and then if you held it down all the way, then Mario would stop and you would have the chance to aim. And other games like Super Smash Bros. Had light shielding that took advantage of that, but they've never been able to replicate that after the fact, so they had to do something like this, and this was their solution. It's not the end of the world, but it just feels like you're playing, I mean, honestly, like, I'm gonna say it, it feels like I'm playing an emulator on a PC, except it's just like kind of like locked on my Switch. It feels like that level of work went into this, where it's just kind of like a ROM dumped into a place. Having the different button prompts is really not that great, but I will tell you what is great. The art style in that game has aged very well. The glossiness of the Isle Delfino, and just the vibrant colors and how they chose to make the graphics a lot more rounded. The game looks awesome, and that's almost carrying the experience for me. Also, Mario in that game controls so well. That jump that you can do, where you dive and jump forward at the same time, is amazing. I love all the levels where they take the flood away. And so I'm having a good time with that one. That's probably the one I'm enjoying the most right now. Galaxy.
Well, hold on. I was going to say, let me say something really quick. I actually do.
Yeah, go ahead and interrupt my incredibly long monologue.
No, you're fine. You're totally fine. I was just going to say, I actually like that in Sunshine, because they have two different R buttons on the Switch controllers, I do like that you can use one to lightly spray the water and still move around, and one button to stand in place and shoot the water if you want to be able to aim. I like that because I found myself, when I played the GameCube version for the first time in a long time, a few months ago once again, that it's easy to mess up. Even though it's a cool functionality of the GameCube controller, I found myself messing up with that somewhat often. Not all the time, but, you know, it's kind of like 50-50. So I like the fact that you've got two different buttons I feel like that would make that a lot easier. I will say, though, the fact that they don't allow you to invert the camera is hysterical. I'm somebody that never plays with inverted controls. I've never liked them, but I know you're somebody that almost religiously uses inverted controls for the camera. The only game that I use inverted camera or controls on is Star Fox, and that's literally it. So I find that to be hysterical that that's not just something that you can change, especially because the original Super Mario Sunshine was inverted. Now it's not. That's all I wanted to touch on, though. I like the being able to switch between the two buttons for how you spray the water. I think even though I like my games without inverted controls, I feel like that's a silly change that they made, just not giving you the option to go with what your preference is.
Yeah, and that's what would have been cool. I mean, you know, and we have the Joy-Con and the Pro controller. It's like, man, if you're gonna lock me out of the GameCube controller, give me some gyro controls. How great would that be if I could, you know, aim with that? That would feel so much more natural. But you know, I keep doing the opposite of what I'm trying to do. And that game never has you needing to be super precise. But yeah, it just kind of comes up. And every time it does, I'm just like, oh, man, I'm not playing Mario Sunshine. I'm playing an emulator, a ROM on an emulator. And it's just or an ISO file, rather. But yeah, it's just that's not feeling great. But, you know, the game, you know, it's widescreen Mario Sunshine, and it's the only way that you can play the game without buying $100 copy on eBay. So, I'll take it. And yeah, I mean, that's what that experience is. It's just kind of inoffensive. And that game has a million problems that we can talk about some other time. I haven't gotten far enough into the game for them to grind my brain into mush. But tell me this: we're avoiding all of the blue coins. I'm thinking that I avoid all the blue coins until the end of the game, and then I grab them all in one swoop because you can't tell which ones you've already gotten, right?
Correct. Unless they've added some checklist to the game, there is no way to know how many blue coins you've collected in a level and in what episodes those blue coins reside in.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, addressing huge problems like that would have been nice, but you know, here we are.
Oh, that's my Mario favorite thing about playing Super Mario Sunshine. I mean, I've shared this joke with you and Trevor a million times, but one of my favorite blue coins is in Rico Harbor, where there's this random enemy just throughout that entire level. There's this one little spider that you're supposed to go and spray with water, and he'll produce a blue coin. The only issue with that is that this enemy only does that on episode 7 of Rico Harbor. Which to me is just the most hysterical thing. You know, it's just, and to me, because there's no checklist or no way of knowing how many blue coins you've already collected in one level, it just, to me, without watching some guide and keeping track yourself, there's almost no way of keeping up with that. So yeah, that's good on you guys to wait to get those blue coins, because it was a nightmare for me to go back because there were so many blue coins I couldn't remember if I had already gotten them or not when I was using a guide as a reference point. So
And some people have made online checklists, but they're just kind of hard to follow, where it's like, this is the blue coin that's behind this in episode 3. It's too much. And yeah, them changing during episodes, man, people complain about having to switch Kongs to collect different color bananas, man. You gotta like exit the level, go back into the level, go back to the same place, and then, you know, you basically have to search the same place as 7 different times for blue coins.
Well, we know why that's a, you know, why you can critique that, but you can't critique Super Mario Sunshine, is Donkey Kong's not Mario. It doesn't get the Mario and Zelda bump. So there's,
yeah,
you know, I said that to you plenty of times, that I look at Super Mario 64 and Super Mario Sunshine, and then I look at 3D platformers like Donkey Kong 64 or Banjo-Kazooie and Tooie, and people love to point out the flaws, even though there's plenty of people who love those games. They love to nitpick the flaws, but they'll completely overlook them with Super Mario 64 and Super Mario Sunshine. Just even something like that with the blue coins, like that to me is the most ridiculous. Like, people call Donkey Kong 64 a collectathon and criticize it for that. I mean, the blue coins is the worst fetch quest collectible to me that I can think of in a video game, almost period. You know, it's one of the most ridiculous collectibles I've ever seen in a game. So, yeah, it's just funny that people conveniently ignore that. We'll see if people continue to ignore that with this re-release, but my guess is they will.
Yeah. Yeah. And I get it more with Mario 64. I mean, that game is just immune from criticism because, and I get it to a certain extent, like context does matter. This was the first game of its kind and it really just set a precedent. I mean, Banjo-Kazooie wouldn't be Banjo-Kazooie if Mario 64 didn't come before it, but they were able to, you know, buff out a lot of the edges and the glitchiness of the collision detection in Mario 64 by having that as an example. And so I get that one, but yeah, Sunshine, I feel like Sunshine is just, you know, there's like just an agreed upon thing. You're just like, I like that as a kid. There's nothing wrong with it. But I can also see like you not, if you, those games all have very strong beginnings. All the Mario games. And so I feel like, you know, if you drop out around, you know, 20, 30 stars or shines, all those games are like 10 out of 10s. All of their worst levels come toward the end. Like Mario 64, TikTok Clock, Rainbow Ride, those levels are awful. They're just, I mean, Rainbow Ride, you literally have to sit on a carpet and wait for the level to play itself for you to get to where you need to go. And you need to do that like 8 different times. And if you ever lose, oh, you have to start the whole thing over and wait. I mean, just...
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's just that in TikTok Clock, you know, you get to the top and then, oops, I fell. Go all the way back down. And I mean, you just climb the same, you know, sort of like blasé platforms 8 different times. But, you know, most people who buy games don't actually beat them. The data on it suggests that, like, most people, like, rarely finish games. I mean, you can especially see this in the PlayStation ecosystem if you ever look at trophies and see, you know, what percentage of people got this gold trophy by beating the third boss in the game. It'll be, like, 10% of people who bought the game. It's insane.
Yeah,
but, I, you know, by that metric, I can see, like, where you'd really like those games.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say I completely agree because Super Mario Sunshine is the same way. You know, the levels to me honestly get progressively worse, except for Pianta Village. I do like that level, but it's also that Super Mario Sunshine has 120 shine sprites, which I guess is the theme for 3D Mario platformer games aside from Odyssey. Which, you know, Super Mario Sunshine, if you play that game up to 60 shine sprites, it's not half bad. You play that game up to 120 shine sprites, most of those shine sprites you're getting are from collecting the 30 blue coins in each level, and also going back and doing the challenges that you do without the flood, except you have the flood this time, or collecting red coins throughout a level. So I just think, you know, if you played that game up to 60 shine sprites, you would probably think it's great. You play the game in its entirety, and to me, it left an awful taste in my mouth, where it went from, okay, this is pretty good, to, wow, I, you know, I'm surprised I don't remember disliking this game at all, you know? And it was a piece of humble pie for me, because I loved Super Mario Sunshine growing up, but you could do away with half that game, and it would be better, honestly.
yeah, and that's, I mean, you know, that's how I feel like I'm gonna feel about Galaxy again. The last like bunch of purple comet stars there are just kind of like boring, and yeah, going from Sunshine to Galaxy was both refreshing and a little disappointing. Refreshing in the sense that that is clearly hands down the best looking game on the collection, not only because it's obviously the one that started in the highest resolution, but the graphics and lighting effects and the glow that they put on everything in that game translates really well to HD. And we already knew this because we've been able to play Mario Galaxy on the Wii U, and it doesn't look a whole lot better than that, but it does. It looks very sharp and very good. The motion controls are not very well implemented. You know, I thought they worked really well in Captain Toad, and it's sort of a similar system in this where you're going to rotate your controller and then press the R button to recalibrate it, but it just, I mean, so far I just have not gotten the hang of it, and I'm glad that Trevor's playing it with me because he can focus on collecting star bits and constantly recalibrate his controller, and I'm not going to worry about that, but... Yeah, the weird thing about Galaxy is that Mario's moveset is so gimped in Galaxy, where he's just, he it's like they were going for the simplicity thing, like maybe all the cool moves that Mario had in Sunshine were going to confuse people. So, you know, you jump, backflip, long jump, or spin, and that's basically it. And the speed that Mario moves at is very sluggish. So going from one game to the other is kind of awkward. Whereas, like, the natural progression of that, there was almost 10 years between those games as we originally played them. So, you know, there's time to kind of forget how Mario felt and for them to recontextualize it. But goodness gracious, is he slow in that game. But, you know, the whole collection, like, yeah, what you see is what you get. It is a collection of emulators and ROMs that go with them. They didn't even do it on the Switch's proprietary API. They did it on the easier ones so they could develop it faster. They cut Galaxy 2 for some reason, but you know, you'd hope that they'll add it via DLC, but I just don't think they will. And this is obviously going to set a weird precedent for reselling old games, and you know, everything is going to be like this now, and it's just gonna, I don't know. That's why, like, don't sell your hardware, don't sell your game hardware, because 10 years from now you're going to want to play it, and you'll be at the mercy of Nintendo or Sega or whoever else to come up with a really good scheme to sell it to you at a premium price, and you know, you'll just want to go back to that. But man, yeah, it's like, I'm very lukewarm on it. I'm sounding very negative, but like, I'm just pointing out the things that I wish were different and that should be different, considering, you know, this is the 35th anniversary. It's supposed to be a big deal, guys. But, you know, I'll stop here for now. I'll give more cohesive thoughts once I'm able to play through the rest of the collection. But I don't think anything's going to change. I mean, besides this, it's just, it is what we have here. It is not widescreen Mario 64, widescreen Mario Sunshine with weird controls, and Mario Galaxy with weird controls. But you know, I appreciate that it's here. The price is awful. The limited edition factor is awful. And but you know, besides that, it's fun. Like, in a vacuum, it's access to these cool Mario games. I'm all for it.
Yeah, well, I would say, and I hate to be a Debbie Downer as well, but I almost feel like we would be better off if this collection didn't exist. And let me explain that for a second. Because of the price and the precedent this sets with its limited release, I only feel like this collection existing only does more harm than it does good. Because it doesn't really do any good. You know, it re-releases these games in probably the most pathetic and worst way possible. And I hate to sound so harsh, but it's true. You know, and I think people would have understood if Nintendo took longer to develop this to make it worthwhile, given the circumstances in the world right now. Because people were already attributing that reason to why we didn't have more games for the rest of the year in the first place. But I just think when people are going to look back on this collection, if it sets a weird precedent in the video game market, and especially for the product that we got and for the price that we got it at, I just think we're going to look back at this and say we would have been better off if this collection didn't even exist in the first place. I really believe that. Give it like 5-10 years, and I think people will do a 180 when it comes to this, because there's a lot of people who are just really happy that we get to re-experience these nostalgic experiences that we grew up with. But I just think, like I said, in retrospect, it'll be looked at as a missed opportunity and something that set a really weird precedent and a really awful precedent in the video game marketplace, because I just am not looking forward to other games being limited collector's items. Just because of resellers and also because, you know, you and I buy most of our games digitally, but what happens when Nintendo stops supporting the eShop or something of that nature? And let's say you didn't have it on your system anymore, you archived it to free up space, and now you can't re-download your game. And if you didn't buy a physical copy because you didn't feel like buying it on eBay for twice the price, or you didn't feel like waiting in a line or searching stores all the time to try and find it, then you're going to be in a tough predicament. So all in all, I just think, you know, for the product that we got, I just do not think it was worth it for this to even come out. I think it would have been better if they took more time to develop it and actually add new textures to even just Super Mario 64 and make it widescreen and just add some changes that would enhance the experience, or just not do it at all. Literally, you could just sell a Nintendo 64 Classic with Super Mario 64 on it, or just re-release these games in the eShop and sell them for $20 a pop or something. You know, and at that point, it would have been much more understandable. But yeah,
yeah. But so, they know what they're doing. I mean, this. I think you might want to double check my math on this. You listening at home? But I'm pretty sure that the same team did this that did the NES Classic and SNES Classic, and they figured out this is kind of like a new pillar for Nintendo. These little limited edition nostalgia gimmicks that. It feels more like a gimmick now than it did with those other systems, because those are truly great compilations with an abundance of great features. But yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know. It's, yeah, it's in a vacuum. I'm having quite a bit of fun with it, but I do not like the seeds that it is sowing. So let's move on before we talk about that for the entire show. Third-party developers are being informed to make their Switches 4K ready. Bloomberg reports that the introduction of a more affordable Switch Lite variant in 2019 helped broaden the machine's potential audience, and Nintendo is making preparations for an upgraded Switch model and a beefed-up games lineup for 2021. Several outside game developers, speaking anonymously as the issue is private, said that Nintendo has asked them to make their games 4K ready, suggesting a resolution upgrade is on its way. Now, this comes on the back of a job listing from NVIDIA looking to improve their Tegra chip solution. For the uninitiated, this is the chip that Nintendo has used on the Switch, and newer generations of the chip come with the promise of AI-based upscaling, similar to the technology that something like the M Classic uses. And so it's not like it is taking the 1080p image and then blowing that up to higher resolution, and then using AI and anti-aliasing to predict where all the pixels should be and round out all the edges, make it look nice. And so you get this nice upscaling. And that's something that we've been doing in our Cotrello Games playthroughs for a while, where we will take something that, you know, like Sonic Heroes on the PS3 is 720p, pop an M Classic on that, boom, you get it upscaled nicely at a 1080p resolution. And so they're working on a chip that'll work in like mobile phones and the Switch that will help to do that. And so for that reason, I totally see this coming. I think that a premium Switch will round out their lineup, where you've got the entry-level Switch Lite, you got the regular Switch, and for the real gamers, it's going to be $400 for the Switch Pro. I don't know. What do you think about it, Matthew?
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see it happening. I just wonder if there will be any software coming out that will actually take advantage of an upgraded Switch. Because I feel like what happens a lot of times with these upgraded systems is that the hardware is there, but developers don't exactly take as much advantage of it as they can. And so I'll be interested if games like Metroid Prime 4, that's supposed to come out in the future, you know, that would be a game that would heavily benefit from a resolution upgrade, you know, so, or just a hardware upgrade in general. So I wonder if there will be developers that actually take advantage of it. My question, though, is that do you think there will be any games that could be exclusive to a console upgrade? Because I don't know that that's ever been done before, but I would be really disappointed if that was the case. But I feel like it has to be more of an incremental upgrade. It can't be anything substantial, because then it would just beg the question of, you know, is this a new console generation or not? So, but
yeah, so all of this stuff, I definitely see where you're coming from. They were like, yeah, surely they wouldn't like do a Switch that doesn't switch. Surely they wouldn't like split their current fan base. But I feel like, you know, all bets are off for portable systems. It seems like they just kind of do whatever. Now, there is actually a distinction there with the new 3DS and the regular 3DS, where a bunch of games could not be played on the regular 3DS that could only be on the new one. There's even a section on the 3DS eShop that that have them, and I think I'm pretty sure Xenoblade Chronicles on the 3DS only played on the new version of that. So I mean, they've done it before. I think it's dumb and confusing and weird, but like, it sure has happened. So that's where I'm always like, I'm looking at the box art now, only for new Nintendo 3DS, and that was incredibly confusing because we didn't even have the new Nintendo 3DS in the US. We had the new Nintendo 3DS XL, and that's the only one we've got. But and then they released the 2DS. Does the 2DS play new 3DS games? It's the newest DS in the 3DS family. They made a system called the 2DS for the 3DS family. I don't get it at all, but I mean, apparently all the stuff sold well enough, so what do I know?
What do you know, Michael?
What do I know? Apparently nothing. Next news article. Speaking of anniversaries, back to a little more Sonic news. I am the guy, the meme. I need to make this where like the guy's walking with his girlfriend and he's like looking at another girl. I'm walking with the Mario 35th anniversary and I'm looking at the Sonic one. And I'm like, oh man, what's going on there? Sonic's 30th anniversary first wave of merchandise is coming in December. Now this news comes from sonicstadium.org, a cool Sonic fan site, and the word comes from a recent Sega press release that the merchandise is coming to celebrate the 30th anniversary of the Blue Hedgehog. New knickknacks include the Sonic Encyclopedia, which will be a cool collector's book that details Sonic's journey as a game character. I've got one for Mario when Mario's 30th anniversary came around. So those are cool. We've got pop figures, clothing, and more. Additionally, Classic Sonic is coming back in the form of a comic book series from IDW, the long-running partner for all of Sonic's comic book adventures of recent. They also did a bunch of Archie ones, but... Anyway, at this point, yeah, I'm way more excited about Sonic's anniversary. We'll get some type of new game, and if they do something like Sonic Mania or Sonic Mega Collection again, that would be amazing. And, I mean, like, you know, if you just look at the bonus features of Sonic Mega Collection and the value of what you're getting in that, and you compare it to the Mario Collection, there's just no contest. Like, the amount of fan service and extra features that you get in those. And that was, like, a GameCube game from a million years ago. When Sega was, like, you know, obliterated in the console manufacturing game. So, I don't know. We'll wait for the 40th anniversary of Mario. Maybe we'll get a true remake of Mario 64.
Well, I mean, the 40th anniversary for Donkey Kong is next year, which, I mean, would really be Mario's anniversary too, right? I mean, that's one thing I really didn't understand about this. I mean, this is the 35th anniversary of Super Mario Bros., but the anniversary of Donkey Kong, which was Mario's first appearance, is next year. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's talk about some of those weird donkey distinctions that happen. So I think you're very excited about this news story. So I'll set the little preamble and then you take us away. So Nintendo has applied for 8 new trademarks in Japan, hinting at an upcoming revival of the Donkey Kong Country brand. Now, Japanese Nintendo reports on these new trademark applications, many of which correspond to the recently announced products like Game & Watch, Mario Kart Live, and Bowser's Fury. But most interestingly, the Donkey Kong trademark has been filed for 45 products, including video game and smartphone programs. It should be noted that the original SNES trilogy of DK games was called Super Donkey Kong in Japan. While trademark filings aren't anything to pay too close attention to, recent happenings, such as Donkey Kong's inclusion in Super Nintendo World and the franchise getting its own license for merchandise rather than being tied to Mario licensing, definitely says something. So, Matthew, take us away. What is happening here? Take us to the DK Vine.
Well, I wish I knew exactly what was happening, because then I wouldn't be as uneasy as I am, because as a Donkey Kong Country fan, you just never know what to expect. I mean, you can go years without any new game entry in the series. I mean, for a series that's done as well as it has, I mean, in the Country franchise, we only have, what, 5 games, I think? 5 mainline games, unless I'm missing one. So, yeah, but I'm very excited about this news, because I don't remember if you mentioned it, but there were a couple other trademarks that were done in there. There was one for Entei from Pokemon. There was a Game & Watch trademark and a trademark for Bowser's Fury for Super Mario 3D World, which those are all just routine trademarks. You know, Bowser's Fury... I can't say that fast. Bowser's Fury is part of the new Super Mario 3D World, so it makes sense that they would trademark that. The other ones seem pretty routine, but just the fact that this is a trademark that covers 45 different products and services, especially when you factor in, like you mentioned, that Donkey Kong Country is known as Super Donkey Kong in Japan. So the fact that a Japanese trademark is trademarking Donkey Kong Country makes me feel like there's something big coming indeed. And there's been a lot of rumors. I follow a lot of inside Donkey Kong people, I guess if you want to call them that. They're big fans of the Donkey Kong Country series, like you and I are. But there's a lot of them that claim to have some sources that claim that there's a lot of big things coming for that franchise, that they plan to reinvigorate it the way that they've done for, you know, or they want to start treating it like one of their major franchises again, because they feel like it's a missed opportunity that they haven't exploited for many years. And, you know, when you factor in the fact that, you know, Universal Studios is going to, 1/3 of that park is going to be dedicated to Donkey Kong. And so when you think that, that has to cover a lot of those trademarks right there, I would think. But I always said this to you, the fact that they're planning on dedicating 1/3 of the park to Donkey Kong tells you right there they would be almost crazy not to take advantage of that in the form of a new game. And whether that means it's a smartphone game, I'd be really disappointed if it was that. But I have been hearing rumblings that internally there's a new game being developed, and you know, that's I'm hoping those rumors are true. Now, they're rumors, they are just that, so take them with a grain of salt. But I really want to see Donkey Kong return to prominence, man. I mean, we talk about all the time how criminal that franchise has been treated when you just look at the sheer popularity of it, how much money it's made for Nintendo. You know, it's Nintendo's 4th best-selling franchise behind The Legend of Zelda, but with less than half the games. You just think if Donkey Kong had even half the games that Zelda has, that number would probably look a whole lot different. So, you know, it's just weird how they've treated the brand ever since the Rareware buyout, but this trademark has me really excited. It could be nothing, trademarks typically are, but let's not forget, Michael, when King K. Rool was trademarked, and then we ended up getting a Mii costume in Super Smash Bros. For Wii U and 3DS, we were all disappointed, but we didn't realize there was a big announcement for the big croc to come back in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate right around the corner, so I almost feel like it could be something related to that. It could also be related to the fact, which I know we'll get to this at some point, but that Donkey Kong Country 2 Diddy's Kong Quest is coming to the Nintendo Switch Online service as well. So it could have something to do with that too, but again, it's known as Super Donkey Kong in Japan, so who knows? But what are, yeah, what are your thoughts, yeah, on all of this?
So the yeah, let's cover that a little bit real quick. So Donkey Kong Country 2 is on Nintendo Switch Online. It should have been part of the SNES Classic Edition, but, you know, no perfection. I guess they didn't want to make the perfect system, so they had to take something out. fantastic game. I'm so glad that that's coming there. And I don't know if they support Perfect Pixel on there, but we'll definitely be playing that soon. I don't get with Donkey Kong, and the big problem with DK, and why I think it's Nintendo's most squandered franchise in terms of potential, is because there's like these different ages of Donkey Kong where they just let Donkey Kong change incredibly over time, and they lose the sense of brand identity. I mean, it's like if Mario was treated this way, like at this point, he would have like you know, more human-like proportions and like a six-pack, and he would have fully voiced lines. But they kept Mario pure. And they play a lot of defense to make sure that Mario's not playing too far outside of his original intentions. And they're getting a little crazy with Mario, because now they won't even let him play with Goombas with names, or, you know, they've banished Toadsworth to the land of forgotten characters and things like that.
Oh, Toadsworth must be hanging out with Toad, or not Toad, what's the big frog's name from the old Mario games?
The big frog,
why am I forgetting his name?
Wart.
Wart, yeah. It's, yeah, Wart. Toadsworth is hanging out with Wart now. You know, the land of forgotten characters. The land where King K. Rool was hanging out for a while, if it wasn't for the fans bringing him back.
Yeah, it was just this incredibly goofy thing that they're doing with Mario, where they're like, Paper Mario didn't happen. Super Mario Galaxy 2, a figment of your imagination. Mario goes wahoo, and he jumps on Goombas and Koopas, and that's it! That's it! He doesn't do anything else! It's such a weird thing that they're doing with Mario. Also, he can cross over with Rabbids. But that's a discussion for another day. They've done absolutely none of this ever with Donkey Kong. And that's what's so strange, because this is the character that put Nintendo on the map. You know, they made Donkey Kong for the arcade, famous story. They got sued by Universal. They won the case. David versus Goliath story. It was something to behold. And then that game goes on to become like the icon of the arcade generation, or one of the biggest ones, you know. And then they have some sequels. They do Donkey Kong Jr. They do Donkey Kong 3 with Stanley the Bugman, another forgotten character. And when the NES came around, this Super Mario Bros. Idea took off, and then Zelda took off, and they didn't really do anything with Donkey Kong in that generation, unless you're a big Donkey Kong Jr. math guy like me. But they just kind of forgot about him. And then when it comes time for the Super Nintendo, they're in the process of making Super Donkey. We know that from some of those leaks that happened, and that game eventually turned into Yoshi's Island, it seems like, as Rare was taking the franchise into its own direction. But there was this like rebranding and this redo of who Donkey Kong is and what he's about and all this stuff. And they reference the arcade games in the intro of Donkey Kong Country, but that's about it. I mean, everything else is completely new. And so this country thing goes along, and that's Donkey Kong until Donkey Kong 64. And then again, it happens where they're just like, okay, forget all that. Donkey Kong is an ape. He is in the jungle, and he fights other apes with bongo controls. And I love Donkey Kong. I love Jungle Beat. It was all like fun experiments around that time with King of Swing, but he really like lost his identity. And then they brought the country moniker back with Country Returns, and you know, that's kind of where we are again, where it's like kind of Donkey Kong Country. It's Donkey Kong Country in spirit, but not with like the Kremlings and King K. Rool. I think Smash changed that. I think they have to notice now that King K. Rool is just an awesome character, and they need to start putting him in stuff. But it's such a weird thing, and I don't like this separation between what Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Country is, and I wish they would kind of play more with those and let them kind of breathe, and you know, maybe it's a separation between New Super Mario Bros. And 3D Mario. Like, we know those are two different things. It doesn't like confuse our lizard brains that they're two different instances of Mario, and like which time is this that Bowser kidnapped Peach? Is this the 450th time or the 100th time? We're not trying to establish a Mario timeline of every time Bowser just kidnapped Peach. There is no story or meaning in Mario games. And they could do a lot of that same stuff with Donkey Kong and bring some of that stuff back. But I hope they're going to start managing the brand better. That they're going to get more of a worldwide presence. They're going to get some, they're going to establish some consistency. They're going to make sure that some team is working on some type of Donkey Kong game, at least one per system. And they do that with Yoshi, Even though that Yoshi plays a much more prominent role in the Mario games as an ancillary character, and he was born that way. I mean, Yoshi was originally Mario's sidekick. He wasn't like a standout star. And yeah, you just see the numbers, man. Like, Donkey Kong just used to be a tentpole of Nintendo. It was Mario and it was Donkey Kong. And it wasn't really until the N64 that Zelda challenged that throne and it became that other premier franchise, because the Donkey Kong Country clobbered Link to the Past on the Super Nintendo, and then had the two other successful sequels. And I think Donkey Kong 64 probably came too late in the system cycle to sell as much as it could have, but it still performed very well. But then after that, if they had just kept working on it, I mean, Donkey Kong would be another huge character, just like Sonic never stopped. Even though Sonic changed and morphed over time, they just made sure that a Sonic game came out every few years. And look at that. He's still one of the biggest characters in gaming, and still, you know, doing well with the merchandise and with the movies and all that stuff. And one would hope that they're going to start to do that with Donkey Kong, because I hate to see it as a Donkey Kong fan and as a Nintendo fan, as someone who just like wants them to do well. It's weird that they're just kind of sitting on all this lost potential.
Yeah, well,
I'm starting to think that Nintendo likes lost potential, considering how they look at Paper Mario games.
Well, I mean, I just think from a variety standpoint, I mean, you and I, our favorite Nintendo franchise is Donkey Kong, you know, excluding something like Smash, for example. Mine would still be DK, though, but just not even as a DK fan. My whole thing with Nintendo for a long while has been lack of variety. You know, there's only so many times when I can play a Mario-esque experience or a Zelda-esque experience. You know, you and I talked about this before, but when you look at the fact that Splatoon was originally supposed to be a Mario game, or Miyamoto wanted it to be a Mario game, even though the original developers for the game didn't want to do that. And I'm glad they stuck to their guns, because even though that game still would have been just as fun, you're getting another Mario experience with Mario characters in a Mario universe. And I'm just tired of doing that right now. I just want some variety. Bring back Star Fox, but not in a mediocre way like Star Fox Zero, or give me F-Zero. Give me a reimagining of Earthbound. Even as a major Donkey Kong fan, if you reimagined Earthbound, I'd be stoked with that. I wouldn't need a DK game right now. And that's coming from somebody who's never even played Earthbound. Or if you gave me a new property altogether, but just give me some variety. But I was going to touch on, too, what you were talking about with Donkey Kong's identity, because I think the biggest parallel is actually to my second game favorite game franchise, which is the Crash Bandicoot franchise. You know, because Crash Bandicoot, the same sort of thing happened. You know, you had Naughty Dog, who couldn't work on the games anymore because Universal actually owns the property. They make one game after that, which is a la Donkey Kong Jungle Beat, same type of game, you know, and then they just let it fade into obscurity, you know, and they make a couple games here and there, but every game, Crash Bandicoot dons a new look, all the characters look different, you know, and they keep trying to change things that people know and remember and love about the original Crash Bandicoot games. And I give Activision some credit, because they finally looked at it and they're like, you know what? This is why people like Crash Bandicoot. Let's take those original games that everybody loves. Let's put on a fresh coat of paint, make them look immaculate, and bam, that's a platformer game that sold over 10 million copies on the PlayStation 4 alone, which is that's a huge success. Then you get Crash Team Racing. Bam, same game as the one on the original PlayStation, but now you get all the Nitro Kart courses, and you get Crash and all his friends back in their original glory, you know? And now you got Crash Bandicoot 4. It's about time that, even though they changed the art style, it still stays true to the Crash Bandicoot formula. And from everything I'm hearing about that game, like you know, because the demo just dropped yesterday, like, it sounds amazing. It truly sounds amazing. And, you know, I just look at, like, what you said about Donkey Kong in relation to Sonic. You know, if they had kept making Donkey Kong games like Jungle Beat, I'm sure there would have been people who would buy them, but they essentially just stopped. You know, you had King of Swing, and you had Jungle Climber, and you had Donkey Kong here and there, but the production on that franchise essentially ceased to exist, on top of the fact that every different game that they made had this identity crisis where Donkey Kong didn't know what it wanted to be anymore. It didn't know if it wanted to have the Kremlings like in King of Swing and Jungle Climber like in the old games. It didn't know if it wanted to do something entirely new like Donkey Kongo or Jungle Beat. It didn't know if it wanted to use a traditional control style. You know, and so it just became this confusing brand. And they sort of went back to that in Country Returns and Tropical Freeze, albeit the changed art style and lack of Kremlings. And honestly, I think if you included King K. Rool and the Kremlings in Donkey Kong Country Returns, I think even though that game is already a masterpiece to me, I think you look at that game as even better, because I think that game, as fun as it is and as beautiful as it is, it feels a little generic in that department. And you kind of got a little bit of that magic back in Tropical Freeze with the Snomads, but let's be honest, the Snomads feel like diet Kremlings, you know? They're just discount Kremlings. So yeah, all in all, I'm really excited for this. These trademarks, and like I said, from a lot of sources who claim to have information, or they don't really claim to, but they seem to be very confident that something's coming that harkens back to the glory days of Donkey Kong Country, which I'm really excited about, because to me, even if you give me a new DK game, I'll be really disappointed if King K. Rool and the Kremlings aren't there, and just because I feel like they give it such an identity, you know, where you have this island, you have these pirates that are trying to industrialize the island and take it over. And then the second game, you go back to this pirate island, you know, and there's just so much identity there that I feel like you could do so much with that. Like, what if you did a 3D style Donkey Kong game like Odyssey, and most of the worlds are on DK Isle, and then eventually you go to the Kremlin world and explore their world. And I feel like there's just so much you could do with that. So, like I said, I'm really excited about this. It could mean nothing, but I'm really hoping it means something. So,
yeah, my specific want, yeah, here's my wish list. I want a Donkey Kong smartphone game that is just like the arcade ones, which would work perfect for a holding your phone portrait screen. I don't know what the gameplay would be like. Maybe you would craft levels or whatever, but I want some sort of rebirth of the arcade Donkey Kong. I want Donkey Kong Jr. to come back in something, you know, put him in Smash, and I don't know, send me an action figure or something. Like, my boy's been missing for a long time. My biggest desire would be that Donkey Kong would, like, would become the action platformer, and Mario would hold on to that, like, exploration stuff, and that we would get, like, a Donkey Kong 3D world. That would be just the best thing, because the biggest thing Mario 3D World is missing is like attack options from the ground. You know, jumping on people in an isometric angle can be kind of difficult, and if you get hit, then you lose that raccoon or cat suit. And so I think Donkey Kong's moveset would be just perfect for that.
Well, and
although, you know, I'd love to see them take another crack at a 3D Donkey Kong game as well. Where, you know, like, and I'd also be okay with another Country game. That's probably what we would get, is just another side-scrolling Donkey Kong Country game that would probably have Retro supervise the project and have someone else make it. But my hope is that it's something really out there and different and ambitious.
Well, I was going to say, I'd even be okay with the Crash Bandicoot style game. You know, Donkey Kong 64, early in its development, was actually from some article I was reading before, that they actually had plans to make Donkey Kong 64 a 2.5D platformer as opposed to 3D, which would be more along the lines of Crash Bandicoot type of game. But even seeing Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time, the pirate levels, it made me think, I'm like, you know, you swap that pirate level and you put in Donkey Kong and Diddy Kong in that, and, you know, and I think that would, even something like that, I'd be stoked for. I mean, just a new game, period. I think I'm more leaning towards a new 3D game, but I would have loved to see Retro Studios finish the trilogy with a third game, which I thought, you know, for the third game, they could definitely bring the Kremlings back into that, and you could go to their world, and I think you would get some really cool level variety by doing that, because then you would no longer have jungles and natural environments. You would have, like, you know, dreary castles and, like, the beehive, or pirate ships, or, you know, the lava world, you know, there'd be, or the lost world too. You'd have things like that they could really play with. But But yeah, I mean, I'll just take anything at this point. Give me the original characters and the Kremlings, and you could give me a 2D platformer, 2.5D, 3D, 4D, 5D, I don't care. Any DK.
A Donkey Kong game that where you can taste.
Yeah, as long as that D is followed by a K, then I'm with it. That's all I gotta say.
Yeah, there you go.
But I feel like we should touch on, though, I brought up how Donkey Kong Country 2 Diddy's Kong Quest is coming to the Nintendo Switch online service. We should probably mention the other games that are coming to that as well, which I've got that pulled up right here. We've also got Mario Super Picross. Am I saying that right? Is that like picture?
Yeah.
Okay. The Peacekeepers. And then for the NES, we've got SCAT Special Cybernetic Attack Team, which that's a really cool title for a game. I don't know what that is, but I'm interested.
Yeah, they always package like two no-name games, one big Nintendo first party, and then something only for Japanese people. Now, this time, we actually got the Japanese treat, so that Mario Picross game never came to the West, and we're allowed to play it now. I really like when they do that. I mean, it's like, dude, you know, if it's a free game, we'll work around the language barrier. You know, like a lot of games would be fine with it. I think you could play Super Mario World in any language and you would understand it. But but yeah, I'm excited to play DKC 2. We recently played through the first one, and I can't wait to revisit
for like
that game.
600th time, mind you. But yes, I can't wait to revisit the second one either. It's always kind of a bummer for me playing the second game because, you know, your favorite game character is Diddy Kong, so you get to play him in that. My favorite game character is Donkey Kong, and I'm always a little bummed out that I have to play Dixie Kong in that game when we play together, just because I love Dixie Kong too, but I feel like that was an odd design choice. I still always, if I ever got to talk to the original developers from Rare, that's the one question I would want to ask them is, why did you take the main character and take him out of the game? Like, that still upsets me to this day. I always wanted to play through that pirate Kremling world with DK and Diddy, you know, it just would have felt so much cooler. And maybe you're saving Dixie Kong instead, you know, and that's how they introduce her to the franchise. But I just, that's always the letdown with that game for me. But still a tremendous game. I mean, one of the best 2D platformers of all time. So that's a real treat that's coming to the Switch online service. And not very long after the first game got on there. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. That is cool for sure. Next news story. I'm like thinking, is there any banana we've left unpeeled in this conversation? I don't think so. I think we've covered the entire history of the franchise and where we want it to go. All right, so let's get into our last news story for the podcast. The Super Mario Brothers movie has been reconfirmed to be slated to come out in 2022, and plans to expand Nintendo IP into other ventures remains an initiative at Nintendo. And this report comes from James Batchelor at GamesIndustry.biz. He is talking about the Nintendo management meeting that happened, I guess, like a few days ago. It happened this week. And I just love how honest people are with movie releases. It's just like, you know, you hear Tom Holland talking about working on the Uncharted movie. It's like, we're working on an Uncharted movie. We're trying to make it come out at this day, and we have these actors. With games, everything is so secretive. All we get is a stupid logo every, you know, for, and then we have to wait 3 more years for information. I also like the direction that this is heading in. They're going to test the waters with Mario. This movie's going to do very well, I presume, with just all the momentum that the Mario brand has between the Lego sets and the Monopoly set, the Jenga, the Hot Wheels, the games. I mean, there's just a lot of Mario energy happening right now, and that is all intentional. They want to make Mario a franchise like Pokemon, that is a multimedia franchise where you've got all these different arms. You know, little known fact, the game side of Pokemon is significant. It's a lot of revenue, but where they make the real money is that merchandise, my boy. It is all the shirts, all the toys, all of that really makes a successful IP, and that's how Pokemon became the most valuable, the highest grossing IP or the highest grossing media franchise in the world. And Mario has potential to be top five. And they're going to take that energy to other Nintendo things. And, you know, hopefully we'll get a couple more movies, or maybe a Netflix series, something like that. I'm hoping they'll reboot the Donkey Kong Country TV show with all the dancing and the singing intact. And, you know, we'll see where this goes. What would be really cool is if Universal teamed up with Nintendo to make a Donkey Kong movie, because then it would come full circle. Their relationship started with a lawsuit that Donkey Kong was too similar to King Kong. So if they teamed up to make a movie 40-something years later, my goodness, wouldn't that be a cool story?
It certainly would be. I know you and I would be very excited for that. But, you know, to touch on the, you know, what you're talking about, the initiative to try and, you know, create more of a revenue stream for other Nintendo properties, and how well Mario's doing from a merchandising standpoint outside of video game sales. You know, that's something I've always told you I feel like is honestly a missed opportunity on Nintendo's part, is I feel like they focus so much of their attention on making Mario more popular or The Legend of Zelda more popular, and a lot of these franchises that I feel like don't need any help being popular. And so I like that they have, at least they're saying that they want to, you know, do more with more Nintendo IP, because I always feel like, you know, if Super Mario and The Legend of Zelda really don't need any help becoming more popular. But, you know, if you could take something like Donkey Kong Country, make that popular again, you know, take something like Metroid or Star Fox and make those prominent again, you know, and then to me, it all comes full circle, because if you find a way to make merchandise for those franchises popular, and you sell t-shirts and you sell coffee mugs and toys and all these different things, and all of a sudden, you know, you'll find yourself with people getting interested in the games again, too. You know, I always look at Star Fox, and I think, you know, that's something from a merchandise standpoint could be really cool, and I know it would reinvigorate people's interest in the game franchise as well. You know, if they chose to make a new game, or, you know, my favorite idea would be to take a Star Fox game and make a third or first person massively online shooter game out of that. I think that would be tremendous. And I think you could almost make a game almost like Halo with Star Fox, you know, but just to me, like, that idea becomes so much more tangible if you have merchandise to go along with it, or just other ways to make those franchises to get people to go and look at them and say, hey, that's cool too. You know, because I feel like Nintendo as a brand, you know, is almost so closely associated with Mario, where you would think that Nintendo is almost entirely Mario. You know, if you go to Nintendo social media pages or any advertisement videos that they do, they use the Super Mario font, they use the Super Mario logos, they're always doing little trivia on all the Super Mario characters. And to me, it just, like I said, I've always said this to you, I just feel like it's a huge missed opportunity. And if they could start branching off into popularizing more of their other IP, like, I just think that's a win-win. Because it comes full circle, where you make money off of that from a merchandise standpoint, but then it makes your games more popular too, and it reaches a wider audience. So I'm looking forward to them to see what they do with more properties like that in the future, once they better establish Mario in the merchandising world.
Yeah, well, I think the way that they're doing it right now is more direct, where Mario is sort of setting the precedent, where they can test out this stuff. Brands are excited to work with Nintendo's biggest character, you know, besides Pokemon. And yeah, so I feel like this is really just kind of setting a roadmap for everything else. I mean, what the Lego sets don't include is very interesting. You can't get Luigi in Lego form right now. You better believe there's going to be a Luigi's Mansion Lego set. I mean, and Luigi's Mansion is like becoming big enough to be its own franchise. You better believe there's going to be a specific Donkey Kong set. And I think that there is going to be a long precedent where they do that. But I think for now, what they're trying to do is, rather than use merchandise to promote game sales, they're, you know, using game sales and really just using everything to just get exposure for Mario. That's why games like Mario Kart Tour are important. You know, even if they don't make a ton of money off of stuff like that or Super Mario Run, what is important is that they're reaching out to everybody with an iPhone or an Android phone and, you know, letting them know that Mario exists. That's the other big win for the movie. The box office numbers, whatever. That's great. But the big win is to just create more value in your world and your characters and then pump that into into toys and shirts and stuff. And but I do think that the real core of this is circular. I mean, you look at the brands that have done a great job of this. Pokemon is of course the platinum example. There is a very scientific reason for why they've been able to get that number one spot above Star Wars, Mickey Mouse, Disney Princesses, all the rest of them. And it's because it's got this very incredible circular marketing campaign where it starts with the game. Pokemon is a game first. The game establishes the tone and what's happening for the next 3 to 5 years in Pokemon. And so that decides what the toys are going to look like, the direction the trading card game is going to go. It gives the story for the anime and the comic books a new location and a new world to interact with. And that's where the franchise moves. And so the game gives birth to all those toys and stuff. All of the exposure from that leads into the next one. If you see the show, you might be interested in the game. If you see the game, you might be interested in the show, so on and so forth. And it just creates this nice little circular motion where you're just constantly pulled back into the world of Pokemon. And Mario is hitting a very nice stride with that. He's on your smartphone. He's about to be on the big screen. He's about to, we got the Lego sets. We got the Jack specific sets. We got the Hot Wheels. You see Mario everywhere now. And I think they're going to start to apply that to some of their other franchises. And I think this is also a good opportunity to kind of branch out and take advantage of different verticals of their population. Obviously, there is a large contingency of older Nintendo fans or people that are just older and more familiar with something like a Zelda or Metroid and might be interested in more like mature content for that. So you might see like a TV series spinoff for one of those things, whereas you might be more likely to see toys for the likes of Kirby, Donkey Kong, Yoshi, some of those characters that have a little more mass market appeal. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do with this. I think that after they've extracted a bunch of value from Mario, what's coming up next is it's either Zelda or Donkey Kong. I think Zelda, stands out a little bit more. It feels a little more different, because Donkey Kong and Mario have had that close relationship for so long. But yeah, we'll see where it goes. I think that would just be the coolest thing in the world for Illumination or DreamWorks to retell the original Mario and Donkey Kong story. It would just be the funniest thing in the world and just a great story.
Yeah, well, I was going to say that when you were saying that you think they're using game sales to popularize the merchandise, and that's where I think they have the most golden opportunity I think Nintendo has had in almost its existence, I feel like. And that's with the Nintendo Switch. The Nintendo Switch is on pace to be the best-selling console of all time. Everybody's dying to get their hands on a Nintendo Switch. And the one thing I think the Nintendo Switch has been lacking is for first-party games. I think there is a lot of missed opportunity where they could do more there. So that's where I think, you know, to me, the Switch is the perfect console to develop more games for, like a Donkey Kong Country, like a Star Fox, like a Metroid, like an Earthbound, like an F-Zero, or like something new, because you have a system that almost everything that sells on it does extremely well. So I think that's the other thing I think they need to take advantage of, is use the Switch to popularize these game franchises again, and then you can turn around and flip that into merchandise. You know, and that's why I'm really excited that Metroid Prime 4 is coming. I know we don't talk about that game enough because who knows when it's coming out. But I'm just really glad that's a game that's in development, because I feel like, especially being on the Nintendo Switch, you know, that game never got the mass market appeal that it could have gotten, because the first two games were on the GameCube and the third game came out very early on for the Wii. But that was also the third game in the franchise. So if you didn't play the first two, there wasn't a huge incentive to play the third one, you know? So I'm glad they're doing something with that. And I think you'll see Metroid be reinvigorated from the Nintendo Switch treatment. So so yeah, it's just all in all, you saying they're using game sales to market their merchandise. I think that's why I'm hoping we'll see more first party games that are different franchises, you know, or even just something new altogether, like a Splatoon was for the Wii U, you know. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of all of this.
Yeah, and we've definitely seen that there's a right way and a wrong way to do this. I think it's probably working out very well for Mario right now. We'll see whenever Nintendo gives their next financial briefing exactly how much value has come from Mario Kart Tour, Lego Mario, and so on and so forth. But they tried this with Animal Crossing, and Animal Crossing was huge on the 3DS. I mean, I think it did over 12 million copies on that system with New Leaf, and they tried to push that into Amiibo and Amiibo cards, and it just did not really take off like they seem to have expected it to. I mean, they stocked those things way better than they did the Smash Amiibo, and it just, I mean, those things just warmed the shelves for years. And then that Wii U spinoff game came out, and man, I picked up that game for $10. I got two Amiibo figures and a Wii U title for $10 on clearance. It's just like, it did not work out. So I think that's why they're approaching this carefully and leading with Mario. But it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. Well,
now, I have to mention one.
Well, I was just going to say just one really quick thing. That's why I felt like, I've told you this personally before, but that's why I feel like Mario Kart 8 was almost a missed opportunity, where they chose to put Link and characters from Animal Crossing and Splatoon in there instead of Captain Falcon, which I thought Captain Falcon would have been the most appropriate, because they have F-Zero courses, the Blue Falcon as a kart that you can drive, but also because Captain Falcon is from a racing franchise, and I think he was probably the most deserving of serving in a guest role. And I think using Mario as the lead, like you're saying, I think that would have helped popularize that, just like Smash has popularized Captain Falcon, which is why I feel like F-Zero could do well in today's age, just being the meme that he is, so to speak, with Falcon Punch and all the noises he makes and show your moves. But having a Mario Kart where Mario's the lead, but you're bringing him back into his natural setting, which is a racing title, I think that would have been huge if there was an F-Zero game down the road. So I think you're right, where like using Mario as the lead can be a huge advantage, and that's where I'd like to see them include more characters like a Captain Falcon in a Mario Kart to help popularize F-Zero.
Yeah, if they ever want to return to that, which doesn't seem like they do right now, but we'll see someday. I wanted to mention one more thing about these patent filings, that one for Entei. I wonder if we're going to get a Let's Go game set in the Johto region that redoes Crystal in the form of, like, I don't know what they would call it, but some form of Let's Go Suicune and Let's Go Entei. That's my oddball prediction.
Dude,
of the day.
As somebody, honestly, I loved Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee. I was really happy with those. It made me realize how much I love the original two Pokemon games, Red and Blue. Because you and I and Trevor have talked about this a lot, but Pokemon, we kind of have this love-hate relationship with, and I honestly just think it's, the relationship's gone stale for me. I haven't really truly enjoyed Pokemon since the fifth generation Black and White. I didn't really enjoy X and Y, Sun and Moon, or Sword and Shield. And so for me, when they came out with Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee, just being able to re-experience Red and Blue was just amazing to me. And it made me realize, you know, when people think those games, they have the nostalgia factor, you know, the fact that you didn't even get to play the original trainer and I still found myself enjoying it as much as I did, told me that really nostalgia has nothing to do with it. Like, those games are just incredible, you know, even in the different setting that it had, where there's no like catching like in the original games. But so that's why, honestly, I'd love to see a Let's Go Gold and Silver, whether it be, you know, Let's Go Igglypuff and Snubbull. I don't know. Just pick pick two Pokemon from Gold and Silver. But I would love to see that more than like a sequel to Sword and Shield. So I didn't even think about that. But man, that would be awesome, Michael. That would be awesome.
Well, if it happens, you heard it here first. We the People, every Friday, in hitting your podcast feed. If you like the show, please give us nice 5-star reviews and say nice things about us so other people can find us on their podcast services. We can climb the charts, attain dominance, get the victory royale of podcasts. So that's going to be the end of our show today. Let us know of any feedback or whatever you have, or don't. You know, it's your call. But we'll see you next week with a little more Nintendo news and goodness for the next episode of We the People.